You build the world. The roads, schools and hospitals. That's your work. And we're with you on this journey. Procore, your trusted construction partner. Discover our construction management platform at procore.com.
It's Wednesday, the 13th of November, 2024, and this is Reconstruction with David Taylor and Phil Bishop from the Construction Index. Here once again to talk about some of the emerging news stories from the past couple of weeks. Now, we've done the budget, so we're not going to talk about that again, even though there's all sorts of information still coming out and lots of industry response to it. I'm sure we'll return to that topic later on. So, Phil, I know that you wanted to follow on from a topic that we discussed only the last time that we were podcasting about a certain house builder. Tell us something about that.
I think it's a couple of podcasts ago, about a month ago. Yeah, we have discussed in a previous podcast Vistry, the company formerly known as Bovis. Bovis merged with Linden and became Vistry. And 8th of October, they'd put out a statement, as we discussed, saying that they found that they'd understated the costs of 9 of their projects, their developments in the South Division, by 10%. And this was going to cost them £115 million over the next 3 years, including £80 million this year, and they took quite a big hit on that. And we talked about that and the implications of that, significance of that. And that knocked their share price down from around, getting on for £13, down to about £9. It's quite a hit. Anyway, the update is, folks, 1 month later this week, they come out and say, oh, we've had another look at what's been going on in our South Division, our house building division in the South. And that £115 million cost that we thought is actually going to be £165 million. It's going to be £50 million more than we thought, which is quite another great clunk. And that sent the share price tumbling down again to around £7 or £8. So they've had quite a bash from the markets on these, not the first admitting the error and the second one admitting the error. So they're clearly going through the ropes. And I read in the, I think it was the Times, their reporter had got some inside information that Greg Fitzgerald, the executive chairman and chief executive of Vistry, had actually offered to resign on the back of these. He said, you know, it's my train set. I should carry the can. But he was, it was not accepted by the rest of the board, which is not perhaps very surprising given the authority that he holds in that boardroom, having the two top jobs there.
So he offered to resign as a gesture, presumably acknowledging the fact that he's the man where the buck stops.
Yes,
presumably the buck hasn't.
But deputy heads are rolling, as per.
Yeah.
There are management changes going on within, or I'm sure they've already happened in the South Division. I don't know how many people, and we don't really know exactly the precise details of the error. There's no suggestion it's malfeasance or anything dodgy. It's just cock up rather than conspiracy, which is in these things it is normally the way. So there's still a lot of unanswered questions there, but it's that's not the story we ran this week, which prompted the most questions in my head. That's a completely different story altogether. We ran about something called the Information Management Initiative, which is all sort of BIM related and a thing being led by an organisation called NEMA, which used to be the UK BIM Alliance. NEMA and the Construction Leadership Council are kind of behind it to give it credibility, but I think NEMA is doing the legwork on it. And I don't entirely. I'm not all over the whole topic of BIM and information management. I really don't understand it or why it's, you know, why the construction industry is allegedly lagging behind, or, you know, why we're not good or are good or whatever. But you're a bit of a techie expert. You know all about BIM, don't you, David?
No, I'm not. No, Phil, I'm in the same boat as you. We've mentioned in the past that we find it a little bit irritating sometimes to find people outside the industry saying, "Oh, construction's so sort of Luddite and won't accept new technology and they're dinosaurs basically." When we know that organisations like NEMA, and the development of and adoption of BIM in the industry is well advanced, and so technology is used. But here we are, the two of us, freely admitting that actually it goes right over our heads. We don't fully understand it. Maybe we should just leave it to the people who do. I don't know how widespread that lack of detailed understanding of modern technology is in the industry. I imagine that there are a lot of people who don't understand it and a lot of people who do. But for the benefit of those who, like Phil and I, don't understand it, luckily we have somebody joining us today who should be able to explain it, not only to us, but to our listeners as well. And he is Paul Wilkinson, and he's Vice Chair of the Information Management Initiative, IMI. So welcome, Paul, and help us out. Explain what this is all about.
I'm Vice Chair of NEMA.
Yes,
BIM has been around for a long time. It stands for Building Information Modelling to some people, but there's also an alternative definition, which is just Better Information Management.
Oh, I haven't heard that one.
You know, I started in the sector. I mean, Phil and I go back a long time. Phil will recall I worked at Halcro and then Tarmac Professional Services in the 1990s. And whilst I was at those firms, when I first started, people were working on drawing boards. And, it was very traditional paper and exchange of drawings and documents. But by the time I left, after 7 years at Halcro, they'd moved to CAD, to computer-aided design. And really, BIM was an extension beyond that. You know, we started to move away from 2D into more 3D working. Unfortunately, we never quite lost the connotation that BIM was all about 3D modeling. So we kind of lost that battle. But I think what has happened over the last 20 years or thereabouts is that we've seen an explosion in the use of technology generally. You know, when we were maybe 20 years ago, we didn't have the sophisticated smartphones, we didn't have tablets, we didn't have laptop connectivity almost everywhere in the way that we do have now. So we've got industry professionals whose day jobs are facilitated by devices, but in some cases, their ability to exchange information isn't helped by information processes which are kind of still bedded in the past. We're still working in silos. We've still got a silo mentality, and we're still very contractual and litigious, and we're very cautious about liability when it comes to exchanging information. And these have all held back the industry over time.
So are you saying then, Paul, that it isn't that people don't understand or don't trust new technology? It's because the structure,
they don't
the frameworks,
trust their contract, they're subcontracted.
Yeah, like. Well, that's certainly true. But it's the way the industry is structured isn't conducive to the absorption of that sort of technology. Is that fair to say?
I think that's fair to say. I mean, if we go back to when I started in the industry, I was working for a firm of civil engineers, and there was a long supply chain. So there were lots of exchanges of information between parties up and down the supply chain. And because of the need for people to protect their positions, they were sometimes a bit hesitant about sharing information. It was an attitude that knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. And so people didn't want to give away any more information than was strictly necessary. They were protecting their professional indemnity insurance positions, all of those kinds of things. So in parallel, we had the whole emergence of things like partnering, collaborative working, integrated teams and so forth, which were intended to try and ease the process. But, we still didn't really have integrated information management systems. We started to move into the World Wide Web and work with collaboration platforms or extranets or common data environments. The name has changed over time. And people have moved into this kind of more web-based way of working. But in many instances, still contracts and agreements can often still get in the way when it comes to flows of information up and down the supply chain. And the technology itself also can be a little bit clunky. We've got, for example, design solutions for designers, for, you know, maybe an architectural solution for architects, an engineering solution for engineers, maybe surveying solutions for surveyors, project management solutions for project managers, you know, and the list can go on and on. But in many instances, some of those applications don't exchange information seamlessly. Information sometimes has to be rekeyed or converted.
Yeah, isn't that a quick fix, though? I mean, surely you must be able to create interfaces to allow that. I would have thought that was fairly obvious.
You would hope so, but you know, I think the challenge has been that in a very fragmented industry where working in silos has been the norm for a long time, breaking down those silos and making those applications talk to each other has been a slow process. It's all very well if you all work within one vendor stack of solutions, but when in the real world, whilst one firm might work with say Autodesk, there will be people down the supply chain who might be working with Bentley or Nemetschek design solutions, and the information from design solutions doesn't always flow seamlessly. You know, it can't always be 100% reliable exchange of information. So, you know, it's an issue we call interoperability.
Yes.
And poor interoperability has cost the industry billions over years. And, you know, it's been one of those things which the Information Management Initiative includes as part of its overall plan over the next few years, is an intention to improve interoperability.
So to use an analogy that the older listeners might understand, what you're saying is we're still stuck in the VHS Betamax
age. There is a kind of, it's a good analogy, yes, it's one that we've used in the past. But if you look at how seamlessly some organisations in other industries exchange information, you know, the finance sector, retail, you know, the minute you scan something in a supermarket, you know, it prompts a workflow down, you know, through the supermarket, down their supply chain and so on. We don't have that kind of speed of exchange of information and the easy flow of information across supply chain boundaries.
Why not? Why haven't we fixed this? You say it's been going on for, you know, 20, 30, 40 years in development, this technology.
Yeah. I mean, think it's been more difficult in the construction industry because it started from a very low-tech perspective. There was a piece of research done by McKinsey, and it looked at the digital capabilities of different sectors. And the first study that came out was from America, and they found that construction lags behind every other industry apart from agriculture and hunting. They then did a similar piece of research in Europe, and sadly, agriculture jumped ahead of construction. Construction
sounds like
all of the industries.
We're barely one step ahead of the hunter-gatherers then, by the sounds of it.
Well, there's a kind of Luddite perspective, perhaps. I mean, it's an unfair one because, you know, we're dealing in many cases with a very different environment to other sectors where they're very settled in their supply chains. Mm. They've got long and persistent relationships with suppliers. Think about banking, think about retail in that context. The automotive and aerospace, again, they're much more joined up, much more long-term. When we start a project, we contract anew. When we finish the project, the supply chain breaks down, we start another project, and we start with a complete new team again in many instances. It's only in the frameworks where we get closer to having more persistent relationships, but even then, sometimes there are new people come on board. It's not always the same individuals. The projects are different. You know, when we're working in some instances, in on sites which may be geographically remote, and you know the technology may not always be there at day one to help people communicate with each other efficiently. So there's lots of logistical issues and contractual issues which mean that we lag behind other sectors.
So how is IMI going to facilitate this change? I mean, it sounds like you can't really change the nature of the industry, as you say, if your supply chains change from project to project. What solutions are
there? Do you mean IMI, David, or do you mean NEMA?
I'm sorry. You know, the Information Management Initiative. How is this going to help?
Yeah, I think we have for a long time felt that BIM, for example, Better Information Management, Building Information Modelling, was a kind of catalyst for change. You know, we've shifted away from a reliance on paper documents and drawings to exchanging files. Where we haven't moved forward is getting towards the situation where we're exchanging data in a much more seamless way. And this opens up the opportunity for us to start to connect systems together. Mm-hmm. So you'll hear sometimes people talk about systems of systems and be able to connect, for example, energy systems with other elements of the our infrastructure, so that, you know, you've got a fairly seamless view of how power generation systems are connected to, you know, the systems that drive railway networks that supply heating and power to homes and businesses and all mm-hmm. of those kinds of things. It starts getting into a whole picture of what we're calling digital twins and, you know, using the Internet of Things. Some places, you know, some sectors are more sophisticated in that respect. But, you know, where we're going with the Information Management Initiative is starting to take a longer term view and say that we've got to put in place the foundations for exchanging data in an efficient and seamless way if we're going to get the benefits of, you know, delivering digital twins, having much more connected built environments throughout the life cycle of assets. It's not just the construction, but it's all the life cycle of those assets. So that all of the stakeholders, not just those involved in the construction supply chains, but facilities managers, asset managers, owners, occupants, the workers in buildings, those people using transport networks, you know, the in inverted commas, the general public are an important element of this. And in many instances, what we're trying to do with the Information Management Initiative is serve up better quality data to all audiences so that they can benefit, you know, so that, you know, simple things like sharing open data about transport networks means that later on I can just look on my phone and know when a bus is coming, get down to the station, know that a train is coming in real time. You know, that's the kind of joined up use of data that would benefit everybody. But we don't have that in the construction sector at the moment for things like just in time delivery to site or, you know, having visibility of how much material is on site in laydown yards and things like that.
It sounds to me what I'm hearing is that the first step, or maybe it's the end game, but the first step seems to be getting everyone to use the same tools. So just saying, right, this is the standard tool. This is the standard software or supplier or whatever you want to call it that we're going to use. Now, you can't say that someone has to use it, but you can say, for whatever, Build UK might say as an organisation, we're settling on this tool. If you want to, in the same way that they can't make it, it's not the law that you have to have a CSCS skills card, but if you want to work on these sites, you've got to have a CSCS card, and effectively that makes it the industry standard compulsory, and everyone does it, everyone falls into line because there's enough of a critical mass driving it. Is that what you're trying to do?
There is a resistance to mandating a particular technology, a proprietary technology. If I said you have to use an Apple Mac, and all the Microsoft users would be up in arms, and vice versa. So we have some major suppliers: Autodesk, Bentley, Nemetschek, and others on the design software side. But they are through an organization called Building Smart International, there are some open standards which are being developed. And it's those open standards that will facilitate that exchange of information. So it's not about mandating proprietary technology. It's about insisting that organizations effectively use open standards so that information could be exchanged between those proprietary technologies.
That makes sense. It's like I can take my Cashpoint card and go to any of the major banks and get my money out of my
bank. Absolutely right. Yes.
I get that. But how long's that been going on and how much longer will it take them?
It's been going on for far too long. In my view, I remember going to a meeting of what was then called the International Alliance for Interoperability in about 2003. So we're 20 years on and we're still not able to seamlessly exchange information. But there are moves afoot to make that to improve that situation. We've seen it with the adoption, and you've used the bank card example, how simple it is now to move between banks, the kind of switching between different bank organisations. And that comes from an approach called open banking that the Open Data Institute began. They're starting now to think about a similar approach for energy networks, and that's going to have a profound impact on the organisations like the National Grid, the power generators and so on. And that will flow right the way down to, how people, refuel, but, it's how they connect their cars up, their electric vehicles and get them charged up. It's having that more joined up approach. And I think we're going to see a similar push and pull from major client organizations. They're going to say, we don't want our information locked in any proprietary systems. We want to be able to freely exchange information about our built assets and their energy needs so that they can seamlessly exchange information with power generators and, in due course, people like public transport operators and so on, and have a fully integrated infrastructure system that helps people move around efficiently, that helps businesses trade efficiently, and manages all of the flows of information with much less friction.
But I don't understand why it's taken the Bentleys and AutoCads and those guys so long to get this sorted out. Because it seems to me that they're the boffins. It's in their court. Because if they fix it, it'll be a rising tide that floats all boats. Because at the moment you've just got a certain echelon of the construction industry, which is using their tools and their solutions. If it became as simple as your bank card or whatever, everyone would use it to a greater or lesser extent. It would be their sales would go up 10, 20, 30 fold, I would have thought.
But you're asking rivals to cooperate. These people are in competition with each other.
It would benefit them all.
I know, but I mean, if you're, it goes against human nature to sort of, you don't get Zelensky and Putin sitting down and saying, let's just settle this out, amicably. No, that's not going to happen. And, and there will be people worried about accusations of, cartel behavior and stuff like that.
Exactly. The big businesses will always collaborate when it's in their mutual vested interest.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd love to move to a situation in which the formats in which information were exchanged ceased to be an issue and it was more about exchange. The quality of the software applications, their ease of use, that would be the differentiator that we'd be looking for. It shouldn't be at the point of where vendors are locking people into using a particular proprietary technology. That's not helpful. And certainly government guidance, there is outside of the construction sector, within what's now DSIT, the Department for Science, Innovation and Technology, the Central Digital and Data Office, and they've got a technology code of practice, and that urges people to avoid vendor lock-in. And that's, unfortunately, the situation we're often in with some of our construction software, is that we have vendors who effectively have locked engineering firms, design firms into use of their technology, and that's not helpful.
Paul, you've given us a really good overview of the context in words which even I can understand. So I now understand where we're at and where we need to be. this new initiative, the Information Management Initiative, which is you launched this week with the Construction Industry Council, Construction Leadership Council, and NEMA, your organisation. What is it actually doing? What is this initiative?
It's intended really to, it's the latest manifestation of a mandate. You know, there was a BIM mandate to 2016 that the government said that its supply chain, they should be, you know, should have adopted BIM for the delivery of information, exchanging information electronically across their supply chains. There was a new information management mandate contained within the Transforming Infrastructure Performance Roadmap to 2030. And there was an insistence upon using BIM
in the
construction.
So is that a government
that came from the Infrastructure and Projects Authority. And there was also the construction playbook. So government policy is very much about pushing further adoption of BIM, further adoption of open standards and of and interoperability is included as a requirement of those documents. But the information management mandate in the TIP roadmap really wasn't terrifically well known. So what we've with the Construction Leadership Council done is try to re-energise the process, create a new initiative, and be all a bit more embracing of all sectors of the market. So it was seen not to just be about pushing those involved in construction, but particularly bringing the client organisations and regulators and others into the frame, so that they could work as part of a collective whole to improve the sector. So the mandate, you know, is something that sets out a direction. You know, it's not a ruling. It's not something that has been handed down as a kind of diktat, but it's indicating a direction of travel for the next 4 to 5 years. And once an organisation signs up, we're facilitating the adoption of a set of principles that are, we think, relatively straightforward for organisations to adopt. In many instances, we've got organisations who are already a long way down their information management journeys. So it's simply a process of reinforcing their direction of travel. So further adoption of open standards, further adoption of exchange of information in electronic forms, moving more towards data-based exchange of information rather than file-based exchange of information in the fullness of time, and helping their people within their organisations take meaningful steps forward. One of the things we don't particularly want is everybody to suddenly become an expert in BIM. It's not necessary. What we should have are technologies which take the difficult stuff and hide it behind the scenes so they can do their day job. They get the right information at the right time, in the right form, on the right device that they need to do their job. So if they are an electrician or a plasterer or a bricklayer or something else, they get the right information they need in the right form. They don't need to be an expert in BIM, but they know that the system is helping them deliver information, deliver their part, their role in the information management initiative. So that's the way we'd like to move forward, is to make it simpler for everybody to be information managers today.
Which organisations have sort of come on board with this so far? I mean, you know, it's a joint initiative by the Construction Leadership Council and NEMA. Are you already working with commercial organisations, contractors, designers, engineers, government departments?
NEMA has a network of affiliate organisations. Mm. So some of those will be the traditional institutions and trade bodies. There are patrons of the organisation as well, some of whom are technology providers, but we've also got contractors and consultants. So amongst the early founding sponsors of the Information Management Initiative, we have, for example, AtkinsRéalis, obviously, because they were heavily involved in developing the IMI, but also people like the Chartered Institute of Civil Engineering Surveyors, the National Home Housing Improvement Council, McGee's, the demolition contractor. You know, there's a growing number of firms who've already signed up within the last couple of weeks as we've moved towards the launch and through the launch last Thursday. So as we move forward, we're hoping to get more people on board, more sponsors and more supporters signing up to this and looking then to work with their people and work with their supply chain and their collaboration partners to push information management further forward.
How does the UK stand in relation to other countries? I mean, the French and the Germans and the Americans, are they ahead of us on this, or are we leading the way? When I say we, I mean the UK, of course.
The UK was amongst the, I'd say, in the vanguard of adoption of BIM. A lot of the prototype standards which now form the ISO standard 19650, it came from prototypes, what were initially publicly available specifications, and then British standards. So those British standards and the PAS documentation, they formed the basis of what are now the international standards. Those are now some 5 years old. They're in the process of being reviewed in light of 5 years of experience of adoption. And certainly the UK are still in that leading role. But, you know, because these are international standards, we're seeing international other countries catching up and in some cases pushing forward even more vigorously than the UK. You know, there are some pockets of very good practice in Scandinavia, for example, but also out in places like Singapore. But, you know, if we're comparing ourselves with our nearest neighbours on mainland Europe or across the Atlantic, certainly, yes, we're still amongst the leaders.
Yeah, good to know.
You mentioned Singapore. I mean, it's a bit left field, but China, I mean, it's moving very, very quickly in all fields of technology. It's a command and control economy, you know, a strong state. It can dictate what it wants in terms of the information systems. Do you have any knowledge of what they're doing in this arena?
I'm a judge on an international awards program for one of the technology providers. And we've had entries from projects in mainland China. You know, and they are sophisticated in some cases. You know, they have the ability with their, you know, with a highly centralized economy to be able to push adoption of technology forward much more quickly than in a capitalist economy. So, you know, they are pushing forward, but I wouldn't say that they were racing ahead. You know, they're in some cases they're still catching up. But Singapore is a different case. You know, it's a city state with
Very small fixed supply chains, I imagine.
Yes, and a huge ability for them to also push adoption of technology. So they're pushing forward with, for example, automated processes where planning decisions, for example, are now being based on building information models rather than submission of paper documentation.
Well, this is nothing to do with information management, but I remember visiting a construction site in Singapore about 25 years ago, where they were using a building system where they had a canopy over the whole building. So obviously it's in the wet season, you get quite a lot of rain. And the canopy was sort of jacked up, hydraulical, on almost like four tower cranes in each corner. And every time they built a floor, the canopy was lifted up. And it's sort of a factory approach to building it. And you know, 20 years later, Mace do the similar thing in London and go, look what we've invented. They were doing it 20 years ago in Singapore.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, there's some exciting things going on in Singapore. I've been out there two or three times and seen at first hand what they're able to do. But, you know, they've got very limited space. And so they're having to make extremely efficient use of what space they've got and build out through dredging and land reclamation and so forth. So, you know, it's an exciting place to go. And they are pushing the boundaries of technology in a way that probably the only some of the Scandinavians are emulating now. But they're smaller construction economies compared to the UK. So, you know, it's perhaps easier in a smaller sector to make those major changes.
Paul, going back to the Information Management Initiative, which is why we're here today, what's next? Is there some sort of consultation process attached to it? You're trying to get people on board? Where are we going?
We're in the onboarding process now. The consultation process has been ongoing for about 12 months. So Anne Kemp and the task group that came together under the auspices of NEMA and the Construction Leadership Council, that task group has sounded out, you know, dozens of organisations, involved hundreds of people in its initial thinking. And the soft launch that we're in the process of now is the start of the next stage, which is the onboarding process. We want people to sign up, to commit their organisation to improving their information management, and to follow some of the material and to start to adopt and use some of the materials that we use to support their information management journey. So we've talked about the ISO 19650 standards. There is also what we call the UK BIM framework, which is a supporting set of guidance documents, which is freely available.
Where?
There is a site called the ukbimframework.org.uk. So people can go to that, and that the standards you have to pay for, but all of the guidance and case study material that NEMA has put together, that's freely available to anybody that wants to use it. And going back to what you asked about international comparisons, in some instances, that framework has been translated into other languages so that other countries can follow what the UK has already produced. So the UK BIM framework will be a key part of the materials and information that people can use on their information management journeys. But it'll probably become broader. It won't just be about BIM. It'll be about geospatial information. It'll start to reflect perhaps exchange of information relating to transactions, you know, use of information for exchange about products, so product passports, for example. So getting into that whole manufacturing piece. So it's no longer seen to be just about the construction, the design process, but, you know, a much more end-to-end process that starts with procuring information, procuring projects, and then also managing the results of those procurements, the assets, manage them right the way through their life to eventual demolition and perhaps recycling. So we get into a whole circular economy. But we can't do circular economy thinking unless we've got data about what our buildings are made of and how they were built. You know, so it becomes a virtuous cycle, hopefully. In that richer data means that we can make better decisions and more informed decisions when it comes to, you know, how to operate, maintain and use, expand and improve assets right through to the point at which they can no longer be improved any further and they've reached the end of their service life.
Is there a central repository for all this data? Is there a British Library for digital construction information?
There isn't, no.
You know, sounds like we might need one.
I mean, there is, I think where the objective would be is that some information would be freely available. There's some open data, but obviously for security reasons, you don't want all of your information freely available. So things like the National Underground Asset Register, which is something which the government has been pushing recently, and I think there's a bill going through Parliament at the moment to bring the National Underground Asset Register into the regulatory and legislative framework. Yeah, that then provides a level of information to those who are authorised to access it.
That's another Atkins initiative, isn't it? I think.
I mean, the Geospatial Commission is the main body behind NUAR, but, you know, there are a number of industry consultants who've been engaged with it because, you know, by the nature of their past experience, they've been engaged in delivering tunnels, water networks, power systems, telecommunications, all of those things that sit below the pavements or below ground that need to be captured to avoid, you know, unfortunate incidents where people, you know, potentially hit a pipe or a cable that nobody knew was there. You know, so that's what NUR is aiming to provide, is a much more structured way in which information can be captured. Once that information is captured in one place, it can be connected to information held in other places. Having it held in one place means there's one place where it'd be kept accurate and up to date, not duplicating things and things getting out of synchronization.
Just looking at the report we did last month, if the management of it is transferring from Atkins Realis to Ordnance Survey. So Atkins are sort of the caretaker of it at the moment, but that is in the process of going to Ordnance Survey, which seems like a more logical place for it to be.
Yes. I mean, there's, you know, there are initiatives underway, and, you know, NEMA will be talking clearly to government departments, as well as industry partners, but other organisations involved with things like digital twins, infrastructure, you know, major infrastructure initiatives. We're very interested to see what comes out of the merger of the NIC and the IPA, you know, the new infrastructure regulatory or body will potentially be something that's going to help drive adoption of better information management. You know, they wrote the National Infrastructure Commission wrote a document some years ago now called Data for the Public Good. So really what we're looking to do is put data from our infrastructure, from our buildings and so forth, in a position where it can contribute to that public good.
I'll tell you exactly what's going to happen when the Infrastructure Project Authority merges with the National Infrastructure Commission. What will happen is what will always happen. They'll reinvent the wheel. We'll have this executive bit of government, and then about 5 years' time, they'll go, oh, we need a panel of experts from the outside to advise us, and they will reinvent the National Infrastructure Commission. As sure as eggs is eggs, they're going to have to have an outside panel to depoliticise infrastructure.
I mean, we haven't even discussed or even mentioned AI, artificial intelligence, or machine learning, or stuff like that. Presumably, this all has a role to play in what we've been discussing.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the reasons that NEMA changed its name from the UK BIM Alliance was that the conversations were no longer just about BIM. It was much more about information management in the broader sense. We were talking about prop tech, con tech, you know, construction and property technologies. We're getting into robotics, machine learning, artificial intelligence, you know, all of these buzzwords and techno babble were coming through. But where we, you know, our starting position has to be that the data that you feed into artificial intelligence, the data that's used by software algorithms for machine learning, it has to be reliable. So, you know, this is really where the opportunity comes from, creating good information management practices that you are then able to seed those AI systems, the machine learning platforms, with reliable data that people can trust. Because that's really the challenge in some instances, that people have raced away with ChatGPT, scraping information from all over the web, and some of that material may not be as reliable as information which is sourced from assured providers of information, where there's contractual relationships and the quality of information, its completeness, its accuracy, its consistency are all carefully regulated. Once we've got that clear data foundations, we're in a much stronger position to have reliable AI, reliable future technologies helping us inform our decision making.
Sounds like there's an awful lot of work to do, Paul.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah. I thought I'd be retired, and the interoperability problem would have been solved 10 years ago. You know, I'm still working away at that, and you know, it may be that it will take another few years. But I think, you know, we're pushing towards this kind of 2030 target, and things like the demands of net zero, climate change, they're all going to become more important. And I think, you know, there are those other big drivers from initiatives from, you know, macroeconomic and social and environmental pressures that are going to push information management forward more quickly, because there won't be other ways of dealing with it otherwise.
2030. We'll have you back in 6 years' time, Paul. We'll hold to that.
All right. Well, I look forward to it.
I think one final question, Paul. When I contacted yesterday, I said, can I have 20 minutes of your time, Paul? I thought that's all we need. So I'm conscious that we've been keeping you. But my final question, whose idea was it to spell NEMA with a lowercase n?
NEMA... as a word, comes from the Greek for thread, that which is spun. But, you know, as a branding thing, it kind of differentiates us a little bit, you know, but we're still playing with the brand a little bit around that. But certainly, you know, the perception that we're no longer just about the UK and no longer just about BIM helps. And having IM in the middle means that we can, we've got information management at the very core of our identity.
So it could be the National Information Management Association, but well, it's not. It's just NEMA.
It has to be all up against that.
I'm being only moderately facetious, but organisations and companies which grammatically start with a capital letter, with an uppercase letter, adopting lowercase first letters does my head in. Yeah. And people who put slashes in and plus signs and, or, you know, it's like Ed Sheeran album names, or we talked the other week about Prince being a symbol and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Pah! Anyway.
So Phil's going to carry on.
I blame the designers who came up with the logo. Yes,
we always do that too, yes. Good. David, do you have any final questions?
I don't think so. I mean, I suppose I could keep probing for quite a long time, but I think we've really covered an awful lot of ground, and you know, my head's swimming already.
Certainly for today, I think we've covered a lot of ground. Paul, thank you very much indeed for your time today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I think possibly it might be sooner than 6 years before we see you again, because this is a subject which is never gets any less important, only gets more important.
Yeah,
and more confusing.
I'll try and keep you up to date with any developments that might warrant a further call.
Brilliant. Thank you very much indeed.
All right. Thanks a lot, Paul.
All of us here on Reconstruction for another fortnight. That's it. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Reconstruction, the podcast from the Construction Index. To keep up to date with the latest construction news and headlines, please visit theconstructionindex.co.uk and sign up for our free daily email news briefing.